Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is called practical politics because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is, of course, rule-based politics, which is what you do at the voting booth. It's very, very rule-based and timeline-based, you know, every 4 years, every 2 years, so on and so forth. And full-spectrum practical politics is engaging and taking out an opponent or a system or a corporation, so on and so forth, by any means necessary under the rules or under the laws, but never breaking the rules or never breaking the laws. But to understand anything, we first have to teach you practical politics, which is non-voting politics. The first basics are the art of staying on point or using a talking point and being able to say it over and over again to make your point, not arguing, just making a point. But this is an introduction, again, to Follow the White Rabbit, and Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Nation of immigrants, nation of immigrants. We are a nation of immigrants. Everyone that knows anything about America has heard that nonsense. A nation of immigrants. In 1965, the country is 89% European, and something like 1865, it's some ridiculous percentage European. I want to say like 90-some percent. That was the first census, was 1865. But 1965 was one of the famous censuses, and was like 89% European. But they say it's a nation of immigrants. Well, people don't grow out of the dirt, so you could say Korea's a nation of immigrants, Japan's a nation of immigrants, or whatever. But they didn't say that about Japan. No, they said it about a big white country, nation of immigrants. Nation of immigrants. What stupid animal come up with that? I don't know. I'm sure we can pin the tail on the honky. It was someone white, most likely someone Hebrew. They're always good with playing with words. But nation of immigrants. Nation of immigrants is comedy. If you think white people migrated to America, then you think George Bush migrated to Iraq. Yeah, we migrated to America just like George Bush migrated to Iraq, and just like Vladimir Putin migrated over there to Georgia. We don't migrate, and most of this world doesn't want us migrating to their end of the world either. No, we're a nation of immigrants. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard. I always get upset when people say nation of immigrants. Who are you calling immigrants? I didn't migrate to America. I came and took it. That's why you got to see it. Migrated to America. Who migrates somewhere and then puts a statue of themselves pointing back to the place they migrated from? Well, you got to have a lot of power to do that. You got to take the whole place. Yeah, we migrated to America, just like George Bush migrated to Iraq. You look stupid animal. That's what you do with your enemy. You laugh at them. You make fun of them. You just laugh at them. They want you getting offended and going a certain direction. You just take it off the head. You take it in another direction. Nation of immigrants. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard. And that's what I always do. I always laugh and say, no, I didn't migrate to America. If you think I migrated to America, you think George Bush migrated to Iraq. No, we migrated to America. We came and took it. That's why we put up a Statue of Liberty pointing back to Europe and not pointing to that big black cube in Medina, Saudi Arabia, or wherever that is. You know, we didn't point the Statue of Liberty at Mecca or Africa or Asia. It's pointed at Europe. That's where we're from. It takes a lot of power to come and take a continent from someone, kill them off. That's what happened, and you know, we put ourselves here. Nation of immigrants. We didn't migrate anywhere. And most of this planet knows it. I mean, they don't want us migrating anywhere. They just want us to get somewhere and stay put, because our Godzilla is crazy when she gets going. Yeah, our green goddess, our weapon system and everything else. And yeah, she can migrate. We can jump on her tail and migrate anywhere you want to migrate. But that's funny stuff. Nation of immigrants. That's funny. Make fun of your enemy. Always make fun of your enemy. I'm going to start out by seven by saying, let's make fun of the enemy. The devil is proud and he cannot stand to be laughed at. Make fun of them. I openly laugh when people say nation of immigrants. If you're 89% European, well, you didn't migrate from anywhere but Europe, and you didn't migrate, you came and displaced someone. You know, that's not migrating. It's not migrating when you came and kill people. You know, when you go in Iraq, you take the place down, you kill who knows how many people you killed. Well, you didn't migrate. You know, only stupid animal would say migrate. They would migrate it. It wasn't a migration to the Indians. It was a wholesale slaughter. I'm sorry. That's what it is. Point out the obvious. That's where things become funny, when you point out the obvious again and again, and you laugh while doing it. always laugh at your enemies because they're funny. They're stupid animals. And when you catch white people, and most, by the way, your enemy is going to always be white, basically, because they're the ones with any power in your way, you always laugh at them and knock them out of the way. Yeah, I always call them self-hating white animals. Why don't you just give up all your assets to the local Lakota Republic and then jump off a bridge? I mean, if you think you stole something, you should give it back. If you don't like yourself, please. You know, we'll bring out a reality television show and call Dr. Jack Kevorkian out of retirement, and he can start giving him an injection. You know, maybe we'll get euthanasia legal. You see, you can do anything under law. Yeah, you can make euthanasia legal, and those self-hating white animals that hate themselves can put themselves to sleep or something. But obviously, they're just playing a game. We don't see them giving up their assets to the local Indian tribes, and you don't see them jumping off cliffs. Although, you know, some of these anti-racists, I don't know. But that's funny. Nation of immigrants. Yes, if you think we migrated, if you think Europeans migrated to America, you think George Bush migrated to Iraq. You know, the most violent migration in the history of the world. That's a violent migration. That's funny stuff. And that's the tip of the iceberg, though, when it comes to laughing at our enemies. And I'll try to make more points like that for you. But this is the beginning. I'm going to talk about some funny stuff in 7. And you know, a couple of those episodes, I started out on talking about historical revisionism. And when you're dealing with white rabbits, the indigenous white rabbits of Europe and their history, it's under one big revision right now. And I mean, it's under total revision. Everything you knew or thought you were going to know, you're going to get your mind blown. Because my mind has been getting blown. So it's going to happen, whether you like it or not. That goes in some pretty wild areas. I understand that. When people find out about these very powerful families and the crazy stuff they look at in astrology and everything else and all this crazy stuff they do that seems crazy to the layperson, well, they don't do it for no reason, probably. You know, very wealthy people are doing something. They're doing something because it works, or they're just not doing it for their health. You need to understand that. So when I'm talking about history, and I'm talking about, and our history always goes somewhere crazy. You know, truth will be stranger than we can imagine. Truth will be stranger than a sci-fi episode. You better be geared for that. But as far as when you read some of these books and some of these ancient texts that they're talking about, it goes out there. I know that. I know that's pretty strange stuff, but that's where it goes. You know, that's all I can do is point you in a direction. Most people want World War II just to go away. Unfortunately, it hasn't. No, it hasn't gone away. Most white nationalists want it to go away. Most Jews want to always yell, Hitler this, Hiller that. The ADL's made a fortune off Hitler. But they have a lot of dead ancestors over that, and, you know, everyone wants this stuff to go away. No one wants it reconciled more than, like, the Muslims. Yeah, the Muslims have this little country, maybe you haven't heard about it, this little country Israel in their back door, and it came about from World War II. So, of course, revisionism, even since the end of World War II, revisionism has been at the forefront. But since the internet came out, it just exploded with these different people talking to each other. And what's funny is the source it's taken, stuff that... I'll give you one example. Stuff that started in Lanzig or whatever his name was in Nazi circles, or what they called neo-Nazi circles. He wrote fictional books all through the 70s, I guess, in the 80s. Then the next thing you know, you got some alternative publishers kicking out stuff that is supposedly true to form. Real off-the-wall publishers. Then next thing you know, you got, shark hunters putting stuff out. Now you got, different military technologies that end up on the Discovery Channel accredited toward Nazis. That it was all a bunch of fiction at one time. That's the source of stuff it's taken. It's pretty far out. The only thing we know to be true is there's been some military advancement since World War II, and everything's connected to World War II. It doesn't matter if it comes back to here or the Soviet, so far so much so that on the Discovery Channel, they're blaming little green men. Yeah, little green men came down and gave Adolf Hitler and helped us out, helped our advance our technology. Well, I got a simpler explanation. Race is real and it matters. But how much the role these ancient texts played and stuff like that, we have no idea. It's a mystery. It's a mystery. The greatest mystery is they got into that Lhasa Pagoda or whatever it was, that hidden Tibetan city. They got in there, invited in, yeah, a bunch of National Socialists, SS, Himmler's group, Ancestral Research Bureau got in there. They brought out a copy of the Kang Shur. I don't know exactly what it is, but it is an epic novel. It's several books, maybe 50, 60 books long, about this ancient civilization. Some call it Atlantis, some call it another name. And we're talking about all kinds of information about the technology, this ancient civilization. We're not just talking about something with stone buildings, apparently. We're talking about something wild. You know, that's all just hearsay, and until, you know, you find out at the fall of Berlin, you have, you know, 1,000 Buddhist monks, and several of them were in SS uniforms that were brought there to do a translation on the thing. And this was the only time a Westerner had ever seen this book. And so you got a lot of wild stuff now. Now, what happened to it? I don't know. Did they translate it? Most likely. But that, you know, I'd like to read it. Why not? But, you know, that's where this stuff goes. It goes out there. It's never been reconciled. And most of the planet wants it to go away. Most of the planet wants it to go away, you know, wants it reconciled and go away more than anyone else. You know, but whoever controls the past controls the future. And now I want to transition and talk a little bit more about women and propaganda, one of the themes we've seen. One of the greatest users of women and velvet tactics in regards to propaganda is the Muslims, the Palestinians, and Hezbollah. You won't necessarily see their women on Fox News because they don't do anything illegal. Yeah, a lot of these women that work for these Muslim organizations, they don't do anything illegal. There's nothing illegal about putting out a message. But let me tell you something. I don't know if you realize it or not, but Israel's lost a war not through bullets, but through propaganda. I mean, that there's one by an emotional little Palestinian girl that is very well done, but at the same time, it's a tearjerker. I'm guessing you can still YouTube it or Google it, you know, emotional Palestinian girl, Philistina, or something like that. She's talking about Palestine or Philistina, and they got her on YouTube. But you can get on YouTube and see some brilliant propaganda, but a lot of their propaganda, and it's not really propaganda, you know, if someone gets their house blown up or gets their father's head blown off, they're really stretching the stuff. They do a good job with it. But a lot of their operatives, believe it or not, are women. Yeah, a lot of them are women. And they do a very, very good job. You get on there and do a search over emotional Palestinian girls or a little Palestinian girl. There's a couple of them that are very, very well done. They're not big budget, but it's very effective stuff. Most Westerners, especially in the United States or Great Britain, are very unaware of this type of thing. They're not aware of it being out there because it doesn't make Fox News. They play it everywhere else. You got to remember, we're only a certain percentage of the population. They're playing this stuff all over the place, but not around us. But it's good stuff. It's good stuff. But Hezbollah and a lot of these Muslim groups have made use of a lot of female agents. It doesn't make the press. You know, all their top operatives you'll see on the news will be males because they're the ones trying to do something violent. When in fact, if you look at reality, what is more obvious? If you look at truth in front of your face, they have won the war not with any bullets. There's never been a bomb blast where Palestinians have ever won anything. They can't win that way. But they have been devastating. They've controlled the message. They've dominated the energy flow when it comes to putting out the message. They've dominated where the message is going. They've owned it. They basically, Israel can't do anything right because of that. Yeah. But they never did it with a bomb. They never did it with Might is Right. They can't. I mean, they're basically, you know, you kiss them goodbye and you give them warning. But you see, even if Israel wipes it out, Israel cannot win. Yeah, Israel can't win that way. I mean, it's just an impossible scenario, isn't it? Sure it is. For the Anglo-American elites and whatnot, they got to give them a home. But even then, is that going to be enough? You know, and when blood runs that deep and you got all this stuff filled up, it's impossible. But they have owned by being on a consistent message. Sure they have. They've been on a consistent message, a low budget. Even their low budget, if you look up that emotional Palestinian girl, Google it or YouTube it, you're going to find some little girls crying and giving their poems and speeches. Very effective stuff, very low budget. The stuff is played all over the world. Maybe you aren't aware of it, but everyone else is. Everyone else is aware of that. But that's a lot of it's done by females, and a lot of them know what they're doing. They do a good job. They actually are more creative at it than the males, in my opinion. But that's kind of funny. The most effective thing these groups have done has nothing to do with violence whatsoever. Now, Hezbollah has an army, and Hezbollah obviously did quite a number on Israel when Israel was invading, using using actual Russian weaponry. Yeah, they were taking out tanks right and left. But when it comes to Palestine, they haven't won through strapping bombs on their chests. They just can't win that way. Now, I guess you could try to take out high-profile targets and whatnot. I'm surprised they don't try to do more of that, to be honest with you. But that would be a strategy. But walking into a disco with bomb on, that just actually reinforces Israel's opinion or makes them look barbaric. But, you know, the type of propaganda they put out with the young women and what they have their young women doing behind the scenes, you're not going to see them on Fox's Most Wanted. You know, they're not on the Most Wanted list of terrorists because they don't do anything illegal. But they are way more deadly. Way more deadly. This thing would have been over with a long time ago if Palestine would have declared war and just kept going at them violently. But if the Palestinians got very wise with their propaganda, someone taught them a whole lot. I mean, they've learned a whole lot about propaganda. You know, everyone accuses the National Socialists. Going back to World War II, there's obviously a connection between the National Socialists and the Muslims, but, you know, the world doesn't really see any National Socialists. Even if National Socialists were running everything behind the scenes, setting everything up, no one sees that. You don't. You don't see anything. All you see is Anglo-America and a bunch of Hebrews out in front of everything. That's what the rest of the world sees. The rest of the world could care less about. The only people that would be, if Hitler showed up like these neo-Nazis, some of these neo-Nazis online had these wild different dreams about Hitler showing up on a UFO. If he did that, the only people that would be scared by it were white people and some Jews. Yeah, 90% of the world could care less. You say, Hail Hitler. That's the funny thing about it, isn't it? Yeah, you don't believe me? Go around some Muslims, go around some Chinese, they could care less. 6 million, you know, killing 6 million Jews to some Chinese person, or if Hebrews start talking about suffering around the Chinese, that doesn't work on them because they understand suffering. Sure, they have a history based on suffering too, and they're very well aware of that. But back to the women. Women have been used very effectively, and the whole entire Middle East thing has not been won through bullets. It's been won through a consistent message. It's been won through sound and harmonics. Sure it has. And whatever they win will not be because of bullets. It'll be because of Israel. You know, these people have been presented to the world as the greatest oppressed people in the history of the world, the poor little Hebrews, and they're sitting there oppressing people. You know, that's kind of a double standard there, to say the least. You know, they don't like Hitler's Reich, but they want to declare one on a Muslim. You know, they want themselves a little national socialist state. And another point I'll make about women, too. Women and political correctness. The funny thing about it is the studies, women baffle the researchers, all women, women of every ethnicity. But if you think about it, the reason the Zulus are still Zulus or that we're still white is because of women. It's not because of men. Males will sleep with anything. Believe it or not, 50% of the males will sleep with anything. I don't care what they say. But the women tend to be very picky. I guess that makes sense. They're there to carry things on. That's why we're still here. But women, something I saw illustrates the point very well, what the researchers were finding out 10 years ago. They found it out a little too late. What was happening was I was in a restaurant. This was not in America. This was not in Great Britain, but it was around an Indian couple, an actual Indian couple, a Hindu, you know, with the red dots on their heads. Looked like an upper class people from maybe Mumbai or something like that. So we're sitting there, and the waiter, and they're sitting near me, and I overheard their conversation accidentally, and they had a waiter, and I guess the waiter looked a little light in his loafers. Maybe he was gay. Maybe he looked gay to the man. So he made a particular politically incorrect statement. He said something about the gay guy, you know, about the gay waiter. And his wife, of course, immediately digs his nails into his leg, I guess, because he said, now why'd you stick your nails, after the guy went away, he said, now why'd you stick your nails into my leg? She says, that's impolite to watch out gay people. She's like, you know, how many gay people do you know? She says, I don't know any gay men, but you know, you shouldn't say things like that in public, yada, yada, yada. Well, here she is enforcing political correctness. She doesn't know any gay people. She's not very likely, probably, to know many. Ever. You know, some women have gay friends, many don't. You know, but this is a great example. She doesn't want to look bad in public. She's reinforcing this political correctness. And that's what the researchers have found out. Women will enforce the stuff, but they won't fully commit. You know, they're not going to go out and try to find gay men to have as friends. If they happen along, that's fine. but a great deal of them just enforce it, but they don't commit, so they baffle the researchers. The researchers said, well, they're going along with all this multiracial stuff, and they do. They don't want people saying anything about multiracial, although a lot of women now are becoming very aggressive, but most women don't want people doing anything to make them look bad in public. You know, they want to have that purse, that they want to go, they're very fashionable with their opinions. But at the same time, just because someone's fashionable doesn't mean like they're going to commit to it. And so they're having a big problems with this, figuring out what's going on with all these women, especially the white women. They tend to be that way to an extreme. The numbers just weren't working 10 years ago. One thing they did do, they made a big adjustment. They found out that males will sleep with anything, so they started targeting the white male Asian woman thing. And that's a lot more dangerous to us than any white woman black man, because that is there's not an African country most white women are going to live in. Yeah, sorry to say, there's not an East Asian country most white men couldn't live in. Think about that. Now, if you go to somewhere like San Francisco, it's a full-on Eurasian merger going on there, and there's a shortage of European males globally. So don't ever be worried about the black men and white women, because that's just a byproduct of $100 trillion debt being run up trying to make equality work. If right now in Anglo-America, Anglosphere is coming apart at the seams, those relationships aren't going to work, and they won't continue to work because, well, reality is going to sink in. You know, reality is going to sink in very quickly. On the other hand, Eurasian is something that would concern me. I look at the direct opposite of most white nationalists. Whatever they're pushing on TV isn't going to work. The only thing that's worked for them, thank goodness they didn't learn that probably in the 70s, is the white male Asian woman thing. That works statistically very well for them. So that's something a little off topic. When it comes to political correctness, one of the reasons they dropped, they just can't, the numbers don't work. You know, they came out with this study, it always makes Amarin, this is just recently, 5 million interracial children or something like that. Well, those numbers are nothing. By the way, if you're in L.A. or New York, it's a lot higher than that. But there's probably some cities in the South that may be a little higher than that, percentage-wise. But their numbers just don't work. What's happened is the only thing it's done is a collapsed Anglosphere. It's totally collapsed Anglosphere. Yeah, it's collapsed Anglosphere totally. And that's one of the reasons. If you try to take China 91% Chinese to make it non-Chinese, you're going to collapse a place. You try to make the place non-European at 89% European, you're going to collapse a place. Well, once again, that comes back to World War II. The neocons cannot, they're trying like crazy to get rid of affirmative action and stuff because it's destroying the country. You got all these incompetent people running around. They got to run a country with a bunch of incompetent people that shouldn't be in these positions because of affirmative action. It makes it impossible. Everything that went for them is now going against them in a big way, and it's kind of hilarious and tragic at the same time. In my opinion, the worst case scenario for our race, the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, would be a collapse of a Anglosphere that never makes it back, and the best brightest just go on, or everyone migrates into like a German-Russian axis back into Europe. You know, once they're out of the way, once Anglosphere is out of the way, Putin will run across and be the savior of Europe, and he'll do it in an afternoon, because they don't have any power there. No one has really any weapons to challenge us. That's the worst case scenario. One of the interesting things about our race is, no matter how demoralized, no matter how brainwashed they are, they're still, the indigenous white rabbits. They're still little white rabbits. I remember when New Orleans happened. Many of you guys remember that disaster in New Orleans. There were some groups of kids here from like Australia and in the UK, and of course those are very, very demoralized, very anti-racist to the core populations. Every propaganda technique known to man has been unleashed on them very effectively, because they're not as interracial in many areas. Or at least, well, I guess they are getting to be now. But anyways, they're caught in that Superdome. And they banded together and they survived. And none of them got attacked, but they probably got lucky. But you know, most most whites in America, even on some conscious level, would avoid that place like a plague. What is funny, whole New Orleans melee, if the federal government would have just stuck it out, most of the Africans probably would have been dropping off like flies after 3 days. Why? Because the water's all contaminated. I mean, if you don't do some planning for a disaster, if you don't have some water filters, that's the big thing. People worry about food, you better worry about water and water filtration. It seems like the whites were doing pretty well without the government getting involved. The Africans, if the government wouldn't have showed up, they would have been toast, wouldn't they have? Sure, most of them wouldn't have made it, because if you don't have fresh water, you're in trouble. You're in trouble very quickly on this planet. People are always worried about food. Well, you can get food. You can get food at a variety of different places. Fresh water is a big problem in that type of situation. But Africans are another group. Demoralized. Very demoralized. You wouldn't see Zulus can get out of the way of a hurricane still. They're not demoralized. But Africans in America, they'll scream. There's a great percentage that are too far gone. True information won't mean anything, will it? Yeah, they'll argue. They'll scream racism until they're all dead. Just like the self-hating, their self-hating white neighbors, they'll scream racism. I mean, it's the same thing in a little bit different angle. But they have been totally demoralized. They can't see anything. I mean, I told one bright young black guy I know. He asked where he would go. Where in the world's doing well? And I said there are a couple African countries that are doing well under a unique model. They're kind of sandwiched between the Anglo-American elites, Anglo elites, and Chinese, and they're kind of picking the best of both worlds and basically been allowed to develop under an independent model. And that independent model that some of the African countries are developing under, like Sudan and Botswana, is very unique. It isn't a traditional type of model that we would see or we would even want to be under, but they're doing well for themselves, I mean, in an African way. Botswana's not doing that bad. A lot of these places aren't as bad as people think. They won't show them on Fox News so much, but some of them are doing quite well. We're used to seeing the places where, you know, all the kids have flies on them and stuff like that, but there are some places doing quite well if you're streetwise. It's not a place I would want to be, but if you're streetwise, if you're African, you could do quite well. Probably better off there than they are in Anglosphere, and some of them may get that clue. If I were African, I would do a tour of some hot spots, especially where you see a lot of human rights violations, because you know Anglo banking's not there. Yeah, if Anglo banking's not there, you're probably going to be doing quite well. And I'll go into some differences in banking, because it's a big deal. Differences in banking is a big deal. People always want to talk about economics, and it all comes down to differences between private central banks and a state central bank. One issuing what I call currency, and one issuing money, which is really just debt. Yeah, private central bank can't really issue currency. They only issue debt, which is a problem because they can't pay down interest. But that's another story. I'll go into that in the next one. I'll do a brief overview of what's going on now in the banking, where this big fight's coming from, where this fight has always came from. It's a critical thing for you to understand how our enemy operates, because that's what they try to do, control that energy flow in regards to money. And it's more than just Hebrews, too. Don't think it's just Jews. No, sorry. They're connected. Some of their guys at the top are connected. Many of them are, especially in Anglosphere, especially in America. They're going to be at the front of everything, or at least have the appearance of being. But when it comes to Africa, there's a couple places doing quite well. Yeah, they're not demoralized. You see, they've had an internet up for long enough to start questioning all this propaganda from the anti-colonialism. You know, all of it is just ways to control population through conflict. And they're not interested in that. You know, Sudan and Angola, they're running those ethnic conflict models, proper ethnic conflict model. You know, they got the Jaja weed out there dealing steel like cornmeal, you know, just wiping out rabbits, wiping out black rabbits right, left, and center. But they got China in there developing their infrastructure. For what reason? Who knows? China may take the whole thing. But in the short term, they're doing quite well for themselves. If you're a street smart African, you can do very, I say there's some parts in Africa that if you're streetwise, you can do well, very well. Some parts of Sudan, they're building up. In Angola, they have some nice condos going in and whatnot. You got the Chinese building them. Well, I don't know how this is going to work long term, but it is what it is, and Botswana's done a lot better than people thought. But they're under a totally unique model. It isn't a particular Asian model. It isn't a particular Anglo model. It's African. If people are allowed to develop under their own unique, taking advantage of their own unique skill set, they can do quite well for themselves, at least under their terms. You know what most people want. What most Africans want, or what most Africans want, is not going to be what most Europeans want, or what the most Asians want. You know, they want things their own way. Everyone right now wants the third position. They want that self-determination, whether it be socialism or some quasi-sharing, some quasi-system based on free enterprise, whatever. They all want self-determination. And that's where our enemy has got itself in so much trouble lately. You got a rising coalition. Sometimes I'm accused of being a little too cryptic, but between who's facing off here in this endgame. Well, one side is Anglo-American, a certain group of Anglo-American that their whole front looks to be Hebrew. The banking establishments in London, Wall Street, and Washington, everything attached to what you think of as the Warburgs and the Rothschilds, in my opinion, are facing off against the third position. The third position is led by Chavez. Chavez, of course, is accused of being a Nazi or National Socialist. He says he's a communist, but he's not. He wants self-determination. And many other groups that want self-determination. Japan can play both sides. Generally, Japan's leaning toward Russia, and Russia, of course, is speaking, and the Germans are there behind the doors doing all kinds of things. The Germans exercise soft power immensely right now. Immense soft power, much more so than any of even the German nationalists know. They're exercising a lot of power, in my opinion, and whatnot, and a lot of that has to do with Russia, what's going on with the Germans and Russia. And Russia, of course, is accused of being Nazi, but they're just nationalists. They're nationalists, but they have no one's unfurled their banner, so to speak. But you have all this wild cutlery of third positionists, basically, from the Gaddafis or whatever, opposing this Anglo banking elite, basically. And that's what's going on. They're facing off, and they've run out of money, and they're $100 trillion in debt in America alone. Or I guess it depends on how you figure it. It's probably twice as bad as they figure it, no matter how they figure it. But the UK is devastated financially because they had to get their deal done. They didn't have it done, and they're in a crisis. Someone tripped them into crisis, and it's caused all kinds of chaos. They tried another revolution. What was it? The Green Revolution in Iran. I've told you about this. They call it a Green Revolution. You know, it ain't a revolution. It wasn't even close. It was a big media event for Anglosphere, but everyone else just shakes their head. This stuff gets old. Your tactics get old. Your propaganda gets old. People can see through you. They see through the banking schemes. They see through it. That's all their banking schemes do is run up a bunch of debt and creates a bunch of conflict. They operate off two spheres, conflict and scarcity. So anything having to do with conflict, like an ethnic conflict model, so on and so forth, oh, they'll love it. Anything having to do with scarcity, whether it be even a private central bank operating on gold or a dollar that's backed by oil. Yeah, oil's priced in dollars. There's a connection there, but you see it's always scarcity. And you can never develop fully off the scheme. This type of scheme has held our race back probably. We're probably 1,000 years behind when it comes to our evolution because of these banking schemes, maybe even more than that, because this stuff goes back a long ways. Yeah, a long ways. But I'll go into more of these banking face-off because I think it's a big deal. But you need to understand that our side's doing a lot better than people think. But your worst-case scenario is probably some kind of collapse and a consolidation of European tribes because no one, the only people crazy enough to try to exterminate the indigenous white rabbits of Europe are white people. Yeah, and a handful of Hebrews. But even then, there are parties in Europe, when I talk about calling tribunals, they're not kidding. You know, the people that run Anglosphere, if there's a giant war on this planet, it's because we don't have a home and they don't have a way out but to go to war. I mean, that's the problem. You know, you got a group at the top of Anglosphere pinned to the wall. They're pinned to the wall. The whole nine yards. And now there's infighting among them. Yeah, there's infighting. There's tons of infighting among even the Hebrews. There's tons of infighting among the Anglo. They're all trying to switch sides and everything. It's kind of going to get entertaining. But in America, it'll be dicey. You need to be prepared for a little bit of chaos, I guess. But what New Orleans showed was something that, chaos does us, we do just fine in chaos as long as someone doesn't interfere too much. But when you start talking about them collapsing a system, which may happen, like Iceland style, I'm talking about an Iceland style collapse in America or the UK, especially America, you're talking about a great massive man-made disaster. They couldn't be going around trying to take guns away from whites. It's near impossible on a large scale. They can try to do it some, but that's not what they do. That would be impossible. They'd most likely come in and recruit young whites to help keep the crazies off of them. Yeah, they don't. None of their schemes are working. And as you've noticed with Mr. Holder, the Attorney General, of course Obama appoints him. Yes, I discuss this with you. Everything becomes racial. Race. It doesn't matter whether it's a ruling. I guess there's been a ruling, or there's going to be a ruling Supreme Court over Sotomayor. Having to do with firemen and whatnot. Everything is going to go wrong with this stuff. It's just time. It's time for second generation communism to go. Now, what comes after that? Well, that's wild speculation. A lot of it has to do with if I knew exactly what happened at World War II, at the end and everything else, whatever was deals were cut over weapons and whatnot, I'd be able to tell you a lot more than what's going to happen soon. But this endgame should be pretty interesting. It's not going to go as bad as you think. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be some epic disaster for our race in the long run. No, things are looking. In fact, I think 50 years from now we'll be better off than ever. A lot of people will disagree with that, but that's my opinion based on what I see right here. You know, I'm always from the standpoint that the glass is half full. It's just probably a preoccupation with the job or based on my job description, so on and so forth. But to me, negativity doesn't really work. I mean, you're white. You got lucky. You won a genetic lottery. You may have won a bigger lottery than you can even imagine. But, worrying about things beyond your control is a waste of time. You might as well try to find something useful about it, because nature will put things in front of you that it will eventually be useful. That's just the way it works. So seeing the glass as half empty is just not just doesn't work with my particular job, and it doesn't really work in this particular business, because if you're a white rabbit and you think race is real and it matters, and it is, then you have nothing to really worry about. Now, if you're worried about bringing back America in the 50s, well, you can kiss that goodbye. That ain't coming back. But if you think the future can be way brighter, technologically and what have you, no matter how much difficulty you have in the short term, and it will be, yeah, the type of technology that we're going to be rolling out is going to be mind-bending, in my opinion. And I've seen enough to make that comment. But I always see the glass as half full. It's just it's a waste of time not to see that. 100 years ago, Sigmund Freud was talking about leading the Hebrews were going to lead the color world against the evil Aryans and so on and so forth. Oh, well, basically you had a color world explosion, but the third positionists have Adolf Hitler from his grave have pretty much led the world against the Anglo-American elites. And, you know, they're basically, their whole entire front group is Jewish. No one says it, but everyone knows it. You know, everywhere you go in the world, no one really is afraid of a little blind kid getting off a plane, but no one wants to see certain elites coming. They certainly don't want to see the ADL at their door. So it's kind of funny to see how that's worked out. Now, in the end, how will it work out for our race, or what does it mean for you? Well, the only thing you can do is be prepared, and if you're afraid, have something to say. But I always find the glasses half full. The only thing useless to me is generally fear. I think Lone Rangers are useless. Maybe I'll go into Lone Rangers a little bit more in the next one. But even they can be useful. Sure, they can help bring the population out of demoralization and everything else. Everything becomes useful. Fear can be useless to me, because usually you've done something wrong. Fear to me is when you haven't done your homework, generally. There's no reason to be afraid. You just know the rules and have a plan of attack. But everything becomes useful. I remember someone challenged me. They talked about, you know, Jews own America. Now they brag about that. And they, you know, Horace, what do you think about Jews owning America? And, of course, I think it's wonderful. They'll pay all our debt. Yeah. That got a big laugh, but that's me. The glass is always half empty or half full. You know, someone thinks Jews own America, that's horrible. I think it's wonderful. They're going to pay all our debt. Put that on a T-shirt. It'd probably sell. That's funny stuff. That stuff, you get on Al Jazeera, you'd be a superstar in the Muslim world for saying that. You state the obvious. I mean, they say it over and over again, but it's bankrupt. What do you own if you're bankrupt? What do you own if you're a front for a private banking establishment that's hated the world over? Yeah, the world over hates the Federal Reserve System. They hate it. They hate it. China talks out both sides of their mouth because they got a lot invested in it. But Russia doesn't have anything invested in it. Germans don't have anything invested in it, and that's where the power is. That's who can push the strings, and there's a lot of other elites that want it to go too, and it's going. And I'll go into banking in the beginning of the next one. I'll give you some my opinions and anecdotes. But what's unique about our race is not is pretty much the direct opposite of what people think. I've looked on some different channels, and you get this this feedback that we're the people of the cold, or we're the people of a particular environment. Well, race is real and it matters, and we don't conform to environments. No, our race has never once conformed to any environment. Africans conformed to a tropical environment. They were pretty much designed for the tropics. Some variations of the Asian tribes conformed to ice, conformed to really cold climates. Those Eskimos with those little slanted eyes, and I'll call them Inuits or whatever, but those Indian tribes perform quite well on ice. We don't conform to environments. No, we've never once conformed to an environment. We demand an environment conform to us. Time and time again, we demand someone conform to our standards. We build an environment around us. It doesn't matter whether it's on a sheet of ice in the North Atlantic or in the middle of the desert, which is, Saudi Arabia built by Halliburton, which is basically our technology and stuff like that. They wouldn't have built it without us, in other words. We are not designed for an environment. The indigenous white rabbits of Europe are not designed around any environment at all. We design our environments around us, and there's never been an environment that wasn't that we did not get what we demand from. Yeah, we do not conform to environments. A lot of people don't understand when they say race is real and it matters how real it is. We can walk into an environment, turn things upside down, and the whole world will adjust. The whole world conforms to us. We don't conform to them. Think in terms of, let me give you a natural example, something right in front of your face. What you see is what you can get. Some places on the East Coast, a lot of places in America, you have these little garter snakes. In North America, all over North America, you have these little garter snakes. These little garter snakes basically are harmless little snakes. A lot of kids like to catch them and whatnot. But crawling through the grass, they'll pretty much disappear. They conform to an environment. That little garter snake is harmless. The only defense it has is that it conforms to an environment. It totally is designed to fit into that environment. On the other hand, if you're in the Caribbean or maybe you're in Florida, they have these snakes that don't conform to an environment. They're called coral snakes. They're big, bright, red, yellow, black, and they're beautiful, actually. Yeah, coral snakes are beautiful. You can see them a mile away, but they don't conform to an environment. They're not a little garter snake. They stick out. They stick out really. They stick out like a little white rabbit in the middle of Detroit. Yeah, they stick out. They stick out a whole lot. They don't conform to an environment. They demand an environment conform to them. You don't believe me? Go grab a coral snake. Yeah, you don't want to tread on one of those. You don't want to fool with one of those. They don't worry about hiding. They don't have to. They're coral snakes. It's just what they are. But that's the difference in those little snakes. Now, maybe not all of them are poisonous, but I wouldn't go grabbing one to find out. they tend to be pretty lethal and pretty deadly, but the indigenous white rabbits of Europe are like that. We don't conform to environments. We demand environments conform to us. That's how real race is. And you could say some of the things about East Asians as well, but most people are pretty dependent on environment. We're not. I don't care whether it's in Iceland on a sheet of ice, they can build pretty much utopia, or in the desert. We can do it time and time again. Sure, we can do it on Mars. We can do it anywhere if we put our mind to it. But saying that we're the people of the cold or the people of ice, that's you don't fully understand that race is real and it matters. It's that real. We don't conform to environments. We're not designed around an environment. And no one else on this planet can totally design an environment like we can around us. Some of the East Asians do a good job, but we turn it on its head. Most of them have no interest in everywhere the Chinese go, they build little Chinatowns. The French, the Irish, and several of these groups in Europe all speak a different language, all build different architecture and everything else, and they all come from the same mother. The Chinas move from China to America, and they build little Chinatown. Wow, that's pretty neat and everything, but we are a totally different level than most, totally radically different. Radically different in every way. They're still speaking the same language, Mandarin, Cantonese, and everything else. We always are on to different languages, new and bigger and better. We're like chaos. In that regard, different types of architecture, so on and so forth. We do not, again, conform to environments. We're constantly doing something new and something different. We're just pure, we're the creative people. That's what we do best. Our creativity and our ability to live in a fantasy world, I believe, go hand in hand. You can't have yin without yang. You know, many times people have talked about our race's ability to indulge in fantasy. And it is nothing more apparent when you look at something like America that rose out of the wilderness. You know, you're talking about living out of fantasy, raising a skyscraper, going to the moon. Time and time again, we indulge fantasies. I guess more of us would like more of the positive fantasies instead of the negative ones. The negative ones are what I would label wordist fantasies, you know, communism, all these isms. These isms can start indulging in a fantasy that usually becomes destructive, sure. In America, in Anglosphere and in parts of Europe, they're living second-generation communism, anti-racism fantasies, egalitarianism fantasies. I could go on and on. We indulge in fantasies all the time. We are the creative rabbits, the fantasy rabbits, and we can go there. And we do it bigger and better. The crazy thing about our fantasies is we make them come true for better or worse. I mean, the communists actually, we've been living in this egalitarian fantasy since World War II. We've been making it work, and it's falling to pieces. It's broken bankrupt. The Russians lived in a communist fantasy. A Marxist, a scientific materialist fantasy. Totally fantasy. It's not a system I'd want to live into. But an economic fantasy for, 70 years or something like that. It's just comedy. It is comedy how we do this time and time again. But you see, if you got to have the yin, you got to have the yin to the yang to get the good fantasies. I've heard some old-timers rip on some of these kids. Maybe if you're over 50, you don't really like some of the different fantasy stuff these young kids deal with, especially the white kids. They like the video games. One of the reasons basically I started talking about I went into some World War II stuff is because let me make a point. Himmler indulged one of his great fantasies. His great fantasies was to look up the origin of these white gods and to figure out the origins of our race and figure out this ancient cosmic war and about these ancient civilizations and to figure out their energy systems. And when you're dealing with an integrated physics, you're dealing with an energy, and not only are you dealing with an energy system, but that energy system can immediately be weaponized. If you know anything about zero-point energy or even the concept, well, it's a weapon system as well. It's totally integrated. I'm guessing that's how he appealed to them, because they wanted alternative energies. So he indulged that fantasy. You know, it's the first time in the history of the world, a white rabbit, imagine your little local Nazi wearing an arm brand, marching up and down going, "Hail Hitler." All of a sudden, he's allowed to indulge a fantasy with a rich, powerful state like the Third Reich and allowed to run anywhere in the world to indulge some fantasy, looking up all kinds of myths and legends and clues and whatever. And where there's smoke, there's fire, so they must have found something. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. It's just too obvious nowadays. They're putting it in too many people's faces. But, you know, that's indulging a fantasy. Negative, you could see it either way. The story hasn't been written yet. I don't know the whole truth of what they found. They definitely did something, though. It's just too obvious right now. But when it comes down to these fantasies, where does it end? Well, it doesn't. That's what makes us white rabbits. It's what's special about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. We can imagine wild configurations and make them come true. I don't like the word as fantasies, but a lot of these older white rabbits, they don't like all these fantasies, these young kids, but you got to understand that energy's got to flow. If you're a creative race, you're the creative rabbits, and you're indulging in a fantasy, I mean, you're prone to fantasy, regardless. It doesn't matter whether it's Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings was a movie that wasn't thought because it was too long, and they didn't think they'd go see it. And, oh, my goodness, white kids everywhere are flocking to see this thing. You know, they even started selling more Lord of the Rings books afterwards. But they didn't think it would do that. Well, it doesn't have any diversity in it. Well, actually, it did. It had some white rabbits taking on all kinds of wild creatures, but they were all white. Interesting thing about Lord of the Rings is very, very successful It was not diverse at all. No, it was a very positive movie. But that, I call that, you know, that I think that's positive fantasy. Some old-timers don't like that. They say it's, you know, too much fantasy, but that's what our race is about. You know, a lot of these old-timers indulge in fantasies, too. They call themselves undercover lovers. They dream of fighting some race war, Rojava. You know, that's a fantasy as well. Now, that, anything can come true. That's the thing with our race. You know, fantasies can always come true. It doesn't matter whether it's Himmler stuff or positive, negative, communism, capitalism, whatever. You know, fantasies can come true. And we're big on fantasies. I don't know how to get the yin without the yang, though. I don't know how to get the positive without the negative. In the last few series, I've talked about some pretty out-the-door concepts that you're not going to hear in a lot of other places. One of the things I noticed on YouTube is that... looking at some of these videos, what these kids are watching, because if you're watching something on YouTube or anything like that, you're usually under a certain age. Believe it or not, there's not a lot of old people on there. Bob or someone like Bob Whitaker is not on YouTube watching videos all the time. It's just not. It's mostly young kids. But one thing I noticed is that, you know, there's a movie coming out with a superstar. It's a big movie star called Bruno, and his one of his trailers had 1.5 million views. Well, that's a lot of views for you know, I would assume that's a lot of views. But then I noticed that there's a 4-minute video about secret weapon systems of the Third Reich, you know, playing to some classical music. It's only 4 minutes long. The thing had 980,000 views. Now, this isn't for profit. This is nothing. It's just some kid probably out there throwing up some clandestine, you know, weapon system that some of the stuff ended up on Discovery Channel. Yeah, some of these different things. You know, they went over this on national TV now. It's no secret what they were up to or the direction they were going. You know, they haven't brought out everything, if they even know everything. But that creativity, that fantasy is going to go somewhere. I would rather go somewhere positive or racial than go anything anti-racial. You know, indulging in anti-racist fantasies. We'd much rather have it down a particular path. So if you know energy is going to flow, you might as well let it go somewhere. You know, I'm comedy. You want to talk about YouTube? You got these kids watching things about the. All kinds of stuff, and it's a lot of fantasy in regards to the Third Reich, and some of it's just we don't know about, you know, about the Third Reich in the Antarctica and stuff like that. But they get, you know, you have hundreds and thousands of views, and there're going to be a lot of little white kids and probably some Asians or whatever too, but they're watching that. If you're trying to if you're looking to appeal to that, you better appeal to what they're looking at. Or better open their eyes up. Antarctica and the Third Reich was most likely a cover-up because they were operating out of Argentina. You know, they had everyone running down thinking they were operating out of Antarctica. And there was no way they built a whole lot down there, but it was a cover-up. That's according to shark hunters. You know, Antarctica was a cover-up for their huge base of operations in Argentina. How much true, I don't know. Supposedly they had a state the size of Massachusetts, one part of, you know, a huge area of Argentina. And you can do your homework on that. I mean, that's it's become old news now. But that was probably cover all, you know, get everyone looking at Antarctica when they're in fact somewhere else operating post Third Reich. But that's another story. But when you start talking about our ability for fantasy, you know, it's got to go somewhere. It's got to go somewhere. And I would rather have it positive in any way, shape, manner, form than negative. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're an old-timer dreaming of that Rojava race war or something along those lines, or some young one reading Lord of the Rings too many times. You know, it's got to go somewhere. I want to get people interested in more along the lines of the fourth and fifth position. That's getting your mind out of wordism, and that's as simple as. That's as simple as getting on the untrained eye, listening to some of those, and reading some National Salvation or Whitaker Online, which is all connected. And that's the direction we want this to go, as well as Practical Politics. And in the next so many series, I may go into economics. In fact, I am going to go into economics because the current banking crisis right now has everything to do with economics. I'm going to give to you something that has really never been discussed among white nationalists, the two different sides of banking, and this goes back to an ancient feud, supposedly, and I'm going to lay out the two different sides very, very simply, the difference between private bank and a state central bank and a private corporation central bank, and this fight is still ongoing on the planet. And we're going to talk about some more practical politics, some neat stuff. I may go anywhere on it, but the idea is to get you interested in Whitaker Online and or whatever, just using the talking points. Using the talking points or get you in the fourth and fifth position out of Wordism. It'll program that, it'll take that fantasy down a positive, it'll take that fantasy and creativity down more of a positive path instead of anything destructive. But I'm going to end today talking about how much power our enemy has. Our enemy is basically people that look like us, that have no loyalty to us, and that's just keeping it simple at the top of Anglosphere and some parts of Western civilization. Many parts of Western civilization. Our enemy, I mentioned before on the talk that Russian spies generally don't get caught. Well, that's true. They haven't been caught in a long time for one specific reason. If you're a multiracial country like the United States and you're a Russian spy and you've got all these white guys in power, well, getting someone to turn coat or getting someone over to your side is pretty easy because there's a common sense of oppression among non-victims. It creates a nightmare, but an easy something to exploit for someone like the Russians. You've never seen a Russian female get caught. I haven't seen a Russian female get caught in a long, long time. By the way, the same would go true for Anglosphere. They're females. Females don't get caught in velvet operations as much as males, in my opinion. But the Russians were accused of poisoning someone in London. And there's two ways to look at it. Either they did it or they didn't do it. Now, if Anglosphere, let's say the Iranians, let me put it to you in simple terms, and what it's telling you. What you see is what you get. Something that you should have saw, but maybe you didn't. But that, you know, that's why Horace is here talking. If someone at Anglosphere, someone in London, accuses you of poison, let's say the Iranians, they accuse the Iranians of poisoning someone on their soil. Well, that's pretty much an act of war for them. Yeah, they're going to take any provocation to go to war. Sure, they will. They'll have the neocons out there salivating, and all the others salivating. You know what I mean? Bill O'Reilly would be salivating, and everything else. Think about that. If Iran were to do the same thing, they'd be at war. So here they're accusing Russia of poisoning someone on their soil. And let's say the Russians did do it. Well, how much? They don't have any power then. If Russia can walk in and poison someone, Russia's telling you, I can get to any one of your guys. I can get to anyone attached to any of your cartels, any of your banking cartels, Rothschilds, Warburg, so on and so forth. I can get to any of them. We know who you are, and we can poison you in front of the world. And there's nothing you can do about it. In a multiracial country, that also is a lot easier. It's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to break into a London or a United States right now and do something like that than it would be Japan and not get caught. Think about it. Sure, multiracial countries are very vulnerable, but think about the message Russians are sending. Well, if they did it, they couldn't do anything about it. They could do nothing but whine and squeal. You know, they remove an ambassador, Russia's kick them out. Russia, by the way, Russia's kicked out every single Western operative attached to some banking parties, period. I mean, it was basically like a Stalin-style cleansing. They didn't shoot them in the head, but some they did, I guess. Yeah, I mean, they didn't get caught, but let me tell you, what does that say? I mean, if you can walk in London and kill somebody, with a you know an umbrella putting out a little radiological tablet and poisoning someone, if you can get away with that, if you can do that and walk away, what does that tell the world? The Russians have a lot more power than these people right now, or the people running Anglosphere are powerless, because if it were Iran, they'd be trying to go to war. They didn't really try to go to war with Russia. They amped up the rhetoric, but they couldn't go anywhere. They could do nothing with them. They have no leverage. They have no power. Think about this. Imagine if you will, JFK in office, JFK in office, someone like JFK, which Obama's billed as a JFK. Imagine the Russians coming over there and starting a naval base in South America with Ronald Reagan or JFK in office. That's going to be a Bay of Pigs type scenario, isn't it? Sure it is. They're not going to allow someone. Anglo-America is not going to allow someone in their backyard to have a naval, a power like Russia to have a naval base in somewhere like Venezuela. But the Russians have done that. Yeah, they started a naval base in Venezuela. We couldn't do anything. What does that tell you? Anglosphere can't do anything. I mean, we're talking about right near the Falkland Islands. Britain went to war with the Falkland Islands. They may very well lose them now. Or people in America are people in Anglo, in other words, people in America at some different power positions are undermining certain groups out of London. There's a handful of different ways to look at that. But if they're not doing anything, it's because they can't do anything. It's not because they don't want to. Neocons want to go to war with the world. They can't. They can't. They don't have any power. Breaking someone that is on the last yard line, that has lost all their power, they've lost all their leverage over people. They've lost every ounce of leverage over Russia. Right now, I want you to watch. Obama's going to Russia. Well, he told him he's going to take missiles out of Poland. He's going to talk about that. Well, he can't really do that. But at the same time, he's got to have Russia's U.S. military presence in certain countries so they can resupply Afghanistan. If the Russians don't okay us to use a certain handful of air bases, we can't resupply Afghanistan easily. In fact, it becomes near impossible. So he's got to go there and beg them for some use of some airfields so he can resupply Afghanistan. At the same time, he can't get rid of the missile base plans for Poland without looking too weak. But at the same time, he promised them that he was going to do something like this. So what do you do? What do you do against Russians right now? I mean, the Russians walked in, according to you, they poisoned people in London. Poisoned them. Poisoned high operatives. Someone very critical to a certain banking sector, banking class. You know, someone in a particular group, a clan, called the Rothschilds, whatever. He's attached to them. Knocked them out. Killed them. That's what they say. They say the Russians killed them. But you can't do anything about it. If I can walk in your country and kill at will, and you can't do anything about it, you're in trouble. You know? And by the way, when it comes down to Anglosphere and the history of Anglosphere, the history of British Empire, if you walk in London killing people, they're going to war. They're going to send us to war. When Hitler starts doing something, they're going to get that big American Aryan attack dog to come and help them. They're going to blackmail us in or get us in somehow, and that's what they did, didn't they? But think about it. If you can walk in and build something in America's backyard, it's because someone in America is tired of something. Probably a combination. But one thing it is that a group is losing power. That's the only thing you can determine. These banking clans are losing power. People attached to the Federal Reserve are losing power. I'm going to go into the arguments about money. I'm going to give you a lowdown on that, but my two cents about these two different banking ideals and how they came about and how we've been at war over this stuff time immemorial. But one side is going down. It doesn't matter if the Russians did do it or they didn't do it. It tells you something. You've got to open up your eyes on this stuff, but it tells you something. It's happening right in front of your face. They're losing power. When someone's losing power like that and you have a common sense of oppression among non-victims, well, all you got to do is goose it. All you got to do is stay on a consistent message. And it just sucks the energy right out of them. But the Russians, like I said, if Iran were to walk in and poison someone in London, or even if London could accuse Iran of poisoning someone, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, use your head. Yeah, it'd be a war. You know, Saddam Hussein, they lied and said he had weapons of mass destruction, and you know, Anglosphere's at war with Saddam. You're talking about someone walking in and poisoning you in London? They accused him of it? Maybe they did. Maybe they did. But if they did do it, well, what does that tell you? I mean, if they didn't do it, well, it didn't work. It didn't work at all. It backfired, nor did they go to war over it. They couldn't do anything over it. Georgia was a serious mistake. I mean, Georgia just got Russia back in. Russia's basically taking over Georgia. The Ukraine is now totally falling apart. The coalition is now busted. Yeah, it's gonna any day it'll make headlines, news that's completely dissolved. They got to go to elections. So Russia's just hammering them, just hammering them. And that's German soft power as well, because Russians and Germans have a lot of going on. But in South America, just crushing them. Crushing them. I mean, what's going on here? So if they did poison someone, really what they're telling you and what they're telling me is, we can do anything we want to do. Anyone there wants to make a move, make a move. That's what they're telling groups behind the scene. If the Russians didn't do it, what it tells you is the people running Anglosphere, well, they can go after a small target, they can cause problems in Georgia, or try to, but they ain't got no power. They're in trouble, right? They're in trouble. That's just common sense. It's very logical. Because if someone in London's getting poisoned and they can't go to war, that's the first time in the history of modern Anglosphere that something like that could happen. It's just, you're not dealing with a bunch of Chamberlains or anything like that. These people look for war on any excuse whatsoever. And in my opinion, that's one of the dangerous things right now. they may have to do something big and drastic just to get themselves out of trouble. Because when I tell you that there's groups that will run them through the ground in tribunals and hang them in front of the world, I'm not kidding. And they're not American either, and they're not English. But they will put them in tribunals, no problem. Yeah, Russia will have no problems lending Russian judges. And you've seen what they can do. They'll have no mercy. But keep your eyes open, this meeting between Obama and Russia. Obama doesn't have any power. Yeah, he cannot have power. And they may humiliate him. I don't know. But he can't go back on his deals in Poland without and save face with the Russians. At the same time, how is he going to ask the Russians for permission to use an air base in Afghanistan if he doesn't have anything to negotiate with? I mean, they've basically broken Anglosphere in half. The Chinese have also played a role in this. Sure they have. I'll tell you how with banking stuff. But the Chinese play a lot of sides of the ball. They don't want to get wiped out. Why this crew goes down. Yeah, crew's going down. But that event in London told me two things. One, if they did it, anyone can make a move. I mean, if they can't defend themselves with the Russians walking in back door poisoning someone in front of the world, that's comedy. And if they didn't do it, but Anglosphere is accusing them of that, but yet they can't back it up with just some little BS thing in Georgia, they're weak too. They're weak either way you look at it. They're desperately weak. They're in trouble. They're in huge trouble. Couple that with a full-blown economic collapse that they're just holding up by a thread. They got problems. They have galactic problems, I guess you could say. But that's the end of this episode of Follow the Right Rabbit. And I hope some of these antidotes, tidbits, whatever, prove useful and get you interested in practical politics, get you on a consistent message, or at least point you in the direction of the fifth position, the end of wordism. This is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit, again, is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is practical because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is voting politics or rule-based politics. And the ultimate, of course, is full-spectrum practical politics, engaging and taking down an opponent, a system, by any means necessary, within the rules, within the law, but never breaking them. And this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening.